to the Entrepreneur Success Formula podcast, where we'll be getting down to earth with real entrepreneurs who work hard and know that success is more than a mindset. Because it takes blood, guts, and a bucket full of luck to survive and thrive in the world of business today, especially today. My name is Damian Mark Smith, and I'm the host for the show and author of The Entrepreneur Success Formula, How Thriving Business Owners Actually Do It. And in this episode, I'm speaking with Rob Warlow, who runs a business finance consultancy helping small and medium-sized business owners to access finance and deal with their banks. Oh, we're going to have a good discussion. As the author of Loan Sharp, Get the Business Finance You Deserve, Rob uses his 25 years banking experience to guide business owners through the process of raising finance. So, Rob, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you very much, Damian. How are you? Okay?
Good, thanks. Good in this. We're still in lockdown here in the UK, if you're listening to this on the replay. And so this is going to be an interesting conversation, because someone who worked in a bank is going to understand how the banks are working. Mm. Perfect. So, right, let's get cracking with the questions. So, Rob, tell us what you do. We know what you do and who you do it for. but tell us the outcome they get was right, which is the finance. So when did you start and how did you get your first customer?
Yeah, well, as you said, Damian, I help business owners raise finance and deal with banks. I've been doing that now for just over 10 years, starting in January 2010. So I guess you could describe the outcome of what I do is getting some hard cash into business owners' banks, which, you know, over the last couple of years, clearly many businesses have found it a bit of a challenge, particularly over the last couple of months with everything that's been going on with the coronavirus. My background, I was very much at the coalface. I was a banker for many years, that evil bank manager. About 10 years or so, I actually took a bit of a career diversion. I went to work in Africa. I was with Barclays Bank in the UK, where I started my banking career. And it's one of those kind of crossroads moments that we all have. I remember I was sitting in the office in a branch one day and saw an internal advert that came out. And they were looking for somebody to go to Uganda. Well, okay, I fancy a challenge. So applied for that job and then ended up in Uganda for 2 years. Did another 2 years in Mauritius, which was quite nice. And when was it? Probably early 2000s then Barclays said, oh, it's time to come back to the UK, Rob. I don't fancy doing that. So I decided to leave and went back to Uganda and worked for a private bank there for 3 years. Then had another couple of years in Kenya, heading up a bank out there. And again, then after 10 years, made one of those another kind of crossroads moments. Was that now? Fed up of making money for other people, time to do it for myself. Mm-hmm. And so, came back to the UK in January 2010 then to establish Business Loan Services. And that's kind of what we do.
Fantastic. So you've obviously got the inner workings of the bank. So this is going to be a fascinating conversation, especially when we come to the entrepreneurship bits. Mm. What's been the biggest mental challenge you've had to overcome, you know, working for yourself and as an entrepreneur, especially coming from, you know, a corporate background like that?
It goes back to your other question that it didn't answer, but how I get your first customer. I mean, you touch upon it. I mean, bankers by their very nature don't tend to be very entrepreneurial. We're kind of brought up in a very process and system driven background. This is how you do things. I think to be an entrepreneur, sometimes you do need to kind of break the rules and bend the rules a bit and be prepared to be a little bit more flexible. So I guess that first challenge was getting out there and say, getting that first customer. And I remember, again, it's about the mental challenge bit. It took me about 9 months, I think, to get my first client. Because when I came back to the UK, I'd been away for 10 years. And my contact base was practically zero. And the people I needed to get in touch with weren't in the same kind of sphere when I left 10 years previously. And so it was very much a case of how not to start a startup, in that when most people leave corporate life, they spend the last couple of weeks trying to download every Excel file with contact numbers and emails and trying to find every business card that they can so they have a contact base ready to hit the ground running. Well, I had none of that. I had absolutely total blank sheet. I mean, I tell the story, and it was absolutely right. When I first started on the 3rd of January 2010, after we'd come back from Kenya, my kids had gone off to school. And sat there at the kitchen table with a brand new shiny BlackBerry. And literally, there were just three telephone numbers in it. My wife's, my mother, and my mother-in-law's. And that was about it. So it's a real hard startup. And so my mental challenge, I guess, was getting out there and just door knocking, because it's not something that you're normally used to doing when you're in a corporate environment. It's kind of there on a plate for you, isn't it? Yes, it took me 9 months to get that very first client. And I've got to say, 10 years later, that very first client is still with me and we're still doing regular business.
Brilliant.
I guess the first challenge that you've got to overcome is knowing exactly that in the pit of your stomach that what you're doing is right.
Yeah.
Especially when I say with my kind of startup, when I had no customers, no contacts to work, totally blank sheet. You have to be 100% committed and 100% convinced that the plan is going to work. And I knew it. I knew I had the skill set, the knowledge, the experience. The only thing I was missing was customers.
Just those pesky customers.
Absolutely. So yeah, it was keeping, personally, I had no doubt that it would work. As I said, I knew I had all the skill set. It's just a case of getting out there, wearing the shoe leather out, knocking on doors and getting in front of people. And then you've got to have a kind of supportive family as well. And 10 years ago, I had 4 young kids. There's a lot on my shoulder in a sense. In that, with no income coming in, and we put enough money aside to say, right, okay, this is our kind of money to keep things going. And so you've got to have a supportive partner. Only once did my wife ask me, is this going to work? And it was on, it's typical, isn't it? It was on the day that she got to the post box before I did, when the savings bank statement came.
Yeah.
And she opened it, had a look, and said, okay, I'm going to see this balance is dwindling. Is this going to work? I said, yeah, it's now getting going. The momentum's coming. So, and she never asked again because she could see it was starting to work. So, yeah, I guess the mental challenge, you've just got to know that it will succeed.
I think we live in like an X-factor generation where people see, you know, on screen, they see people become pop stars overnight and they think that that's how it works. Well, it doesn't, because, you know, those people have like spent years and years and years practicing their trade. And it's exactly the same with entrepreneurship. You know, we think that we can go out and get customers straight away. Well, you can't. It just doesn't work like that.
No.
It might one in a million, but very rare. It's very, very rare for that to happen.
Yeah. It's a hard slog, particularly when, say, you're not known as I was and totally invisible. I went through kind of interesting four stage process when I first came back, and networking. I just got into networking straight away because I realized that's the way. It's all about relationships. You can do traditional marketing, but it's just too very quick. I realized, okay, I've got to get out there and join formal networks and get face to face, because that was my original skill set about building relationships. And yeah, you know, at the end of the day, in the small and SME space, people buy you. And so that's what I had to sell. That was my commodity, was me. Mm-hmm. So I went networking a lot. And that's really how it all started to come together, because once people got to understand me. And this four stage was originally, does anybody know anyone who raises finance? And nope. Then it was, does anybody know anyone who raises finance? Oh, yeah, there is one guy I've met. Don't know who he is. I can't remember him, but there is somebody around. And stage three was, does anyone know anyone who raises finance? Oh, yeah, there's this guy, Rob Warlow. And then the fourth stage was, does anyone know anyone who raises finance? Oh, yes, Rob Warlow, here's his card, there's his website, there's his number. So you really would have to go through that kind of visibility stage of building up your credibility as well.
Love it. That's really good. Okay, so and I'm going to use that bit as the promo bit for this podcast, because I think people are going to really get something out of that. That's amazing. If you had to start again from scratch, what's the one thing you would do differently?
I'd probably do
against the post office earlier.
Yeah, I'd probably do even more networking, because that's really been the kind of linchpin of the business going forward. Never, and we'll touch upon marketing, no doubt, a little bit later, but we've never done any traditional marketing per se. As I said, I really believe that that old thing about people by people. So I knew networking was going to be the way in which to do it, get in front of people. So I would probably have started that a little bit earlier. It took me about 6 months or so to realize the power of that. Mm-hmm. And so just get out there. Yeah, there's new ways of selling on social media, etc. But most of our business now continues to come from referrals, just word of mouth recommendations. There's a lot of noise out there, and sometimes it's difficult to rise above that noise in terms of the competition. Mm-hmm. And so there's no better way of making sure that you build up a bank of referral partners, people who can do business with you. So I would have accountants, solicitors, professional advisors. They kind of act as a funnel for me. And even to this day, I'm still part of a formal business networking group. And they're really funnel business to me. And there's no better way of doing that. You don't have to make cold calls. So I would say I should have really started or got the concept a lot earlier of marketing and building up referral partners who would feed business to me. That's one thing I would do a lot quicker.
That's really useful. Okay, what's the one piece of advice, especially based around finance, that you would give a young entrepreneur or anyone who's maybe lost their job and has decided to start a business? What's the financial advice you would give someone starting out in the current climate?
Business never picks up as quickly as you think it will. Often it's sitting down. I mean, raising money for startups is always hard. I mean, banks and lenders, by their very nature, are risk averse. And lending money to a startup is probably the riskiest piece of lending that you can ever do. There's no track record. There's no client base to work off. So the access to finance for startups is fairly limited. You've got a government organization called Startup Loan Company, and they're superb. And they're really designed to help startups get access to cash. But in terms of, from a finance point of view, you're going to need more money than you think you will. Mm-hmm. And this is where the power of putting financial forecasts come together. It sounds a bit geeky about sitting down and doing the numbers, but you've really got to sit down and probably put three scenarios together, your best case, worst case, and probably where you think it will be, just to start to plan it out. Because it often does take longer to ramp up a new business than you think it ever would. So that would be my thing. Make sure you've got plenty of cash behind you. If you're in a job already, ideally allow at least 6 months planning ahead to put cash aside. If you need to get some finance together, well, be a little bit cute about it. Apply for personal loans while you're still employed because you've got a regular salary coming in. So if you need to think ahead, I'm going to need a cash pot. Well, start it while you're still in employment and start putting the cash aside. Get the credit card limits up. So really plan in advance. Now, obviously, in the current environment, there are many people who are now almost going to become accidental entrepreneurs. And it happens in every recession. After 2008, 2009, the number of self-employed people rocketed because a lot of people came out of corporate life, like I did in that period, 2010. So I would think, so that my one piece of advice would be just err on the side of caution and just assume it will take you longer to get there than you think it would, than you think you would.
I just want to add to that, because sometimes as well, if you're working in a job, the people who you may be wanting to serve are people around you. It could be your colleagues. I mean, there's one example of a city trader that I was working with in New York, and he came up with this this diet plan that helped him. It was based around intermittent fasting. It gave him loads more energy, and he wanted to take it out to the world and share it with people. And I said, well, it worked for you, didn't it? And I said, he said, yeah. I said, well, how much energy, extra energy did it give you? And he said, well, so 20 to 30%. And I said, well, how would that go down with the people around you, your colleagues? And he went, oh, right. Yeah, of course. Yeah, they would really love it. I said, well, that could be your first client. So carry on where you are, build up a client base of the people around you. And now you've got a sustainable business, which is actually a little bit niche as well. And he could see the benefit of that. So sometimes the people around you can actually be your first client. So yeah, it is R&D time.
Yeah. And sometimes that's a good example. Sometimes you need to think a little bit left field as to regards what your business could be. Mm-hmm. People just say you could see a gap in the market. And often it is a hobby or a passion or a skill that you could actually turn into a business, not necessarily in the field that you're currently in at the moment. Got to tread carefully there, though, because one man's hobby can be very tight niche. You know, people say that the money's in the niche, but you've got to be careful that you don't drill down so far down the niche funnel that the available client base is so thin.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. If you're in charge of UK business right now, what financial legislation would you introduce to help entrepreneurs? I mean, you've got to make it specific.
I've got to admit, I'm not a big fan of big government. About legislating too much. But I guess, you know, this dates this podcast in a way, but where we are at the moment in terms of the coronavirus, I mean, there's a big push as regards the fact that sole shareholder, sole director, limited companies have been a little bit left out in the cold as regards support. So there's a big drive to try and get government to recognize that you've got a whole swathe of entrepreneurs here who have kind of been left out. And these are, say, sole directors, sole shareholders. Some may employ people, some won't. But obviously the trap they fall into is that they've taken dividends in lieu of wages, still taxed on that. And don't forget, as a corporation, you're paying 19% corporation tax as well. Mm-hmm. So as we stand today, that's one thing that I think needs to be recognized is the role of the sole shareholder, sole director, limited company owner. Don't forget, all entrepreneurs have taken risks, but you and I in business and most people listening to this podcast will be. We've taken a lot of risks. We've taken a lot of risks to do what we do. We don't get paid holidays. We don't get pension contributions. You know, we all work 100 mile an hour to do what we do. Now, great, I love what I do. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, there is a certain element of risk that we take, and that has to be rewarded in some way. So probably as it stands today, a bit of legislation to help those limited company directors who say have been left out in the cold. That's one bit that I'd look at.
Fantastic. Right, I'm now going to take our networking out of this next question. So what has been your best marketing tactic apart from networking, and why?
Yeah. Online visibility. Over the years, I'm lucky enough, I have no problem in standing up in front of people and talking. A little known secret about my background, I started doing magic when I was an eight-year-old, and I started doing children's parties and cabarets right up until my mid-20s. So I've been performing in front of people since I was 8 years old. And so I understand the power of communication from day one. So even when I was in day-to-day banking, if there were any seminars to do, I'll do them. I'll get out there, get the message out. So for me, it was a kind of core part of my marketing strategy was about being much more visible, especially, as I said, that people are buying me. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day as well, people want to deal with people whom they believe that know the market or experts in their field.
Yeah.
And so gaining expert status for me was very important, which is why early doors, I wrote the book. I mean, before coming back to the UK, took 3 months off, and Kenyon already started mapping out the book. Now, the book was really about, you know, how to get finance, what do business owners need in order to get a message across to a bank. So I had the knowledge there in my head. It was just a case of sitting down and mapping it out. So that was the first thing I did. But then as I understood the market better and saw the opportunities then, particularly in video. So every week now I do something called Business Finance Bulletin, which is a 5 or 6 minute video about tips and news for businesses relating to finance primarily. Just about how to better manage money, how to get finance, where's the finance coming from. So that goes out every Monday to my client base and hits LinkedIn and YouTube, etc. Now, what that does, if somebody ever Googles my name, they'll just find all these podcasts and the videos I've done. I'm rapidly coming up to, I think it's episode 300 in a couple of weeks. So it's 300 weekly episodes that have gone out. And that's been a real boost to my profile. And if my tip here, if you're going to use video a lot more, it's consistency is the key. You've really got to push that out. I made a very public commitment when I thought, okay, I'm going to do a weekly bulletin to video, and it's going to go out once a week. So I made a public commitment. I emailed my client base and said, guys, I'm going to be doing a weekly bulletin. Keep an eye out for it. And one person responded, ha, love to see you keep that up every week, Rob. Excellent. That's just the motivation I needed. Yeah. Now I had to deliver on that promise that I'd made publicly.
Love it.
And people still say, wow, you managed to churn this out every week. And say the tip here is about this consistency. It's in my diary. So every Friday morning, my diary is crossed off from 9 into 12. It just says video. Mm-hmm. So that's the time when I will do the video. I'll research it, prep it, script it out in my head, film it. And then over the weekend, I'll edit it up. But the fact it's in my diary means that if anybody ever rings me up asking for an appointment, I can legitimately say, I can't do Friday morning. I'm already committed. Now, they don't necessarily need to know what it is. It's just in my diary. And so now it's become a habit with me. And so it's really become a central point. And undoubtedly, I've got business over the years because I've been able to establish that expert status. And it's forcing me as well to keep up to date with what's going on in my market, because I'm researching material all the time and exactly what's going on. So it makes you even more credible when people know that this guy just bang up to date with what's going on in the industry. So that's one best bit of marketing I've used, is definitely videos, seminars, podcasting.
Really useful. I love that. Okay, we'll come to your plans for the future in a minute. So what's your favorite business book and why?
This often gets trumped out, but it's such a brilliant book. And for many, it's always the first book they read. It was that famous Think and Grow Rich. I mean, I know it almost becomes a cliche now when people say, but I must have been about, thinking about 18, 19, something like that, probably, when I picked a dog-eared copy up from someone that gave it to me. And it has a special place because it was, say, the first one that really opened my mind to read, okay, there's all this wealth of material out there that people have written and gathered over the years. And I forget the number of times that I've read it over the years, because you always read something new, don't you, each time. So for me, it's got to be that book. It's really started my journey about personal growth and understanding that you can help structure your life a bit better.
Fantastic. Well, look, it's a good thing we haven't actually had that made into a movie yet, because there's another question that we're going to add on this podcast, which is, what's your favorite entrepreneurial movie and why? When Think and Grow Rich is made into one, it will be one.
I guess, like most entrepreneurs, I don't get too much chance to sit down, watch movies and TV too much. I enjoy what I do, and people talk about work and work. Well, when you enjoy what you do, work actually equals play. Mm-hmm. I'm not a great one for sitting down. But however, one film I did really resonate with was The Big Short, which was about, really done in a quirky way, about how the crash of 2008 happened. That was a really interesting, sort of almost part documentary, but part fantasy as well. But a really good example, the main message that came out of there, about when you're running a business, how sometimes opportunities come from connecting the dots. And this is how these guys made a ton of money, by seeing connections that other people didn't. They started linking bits of information together. And it's only when they actually sat down and pulled it all together, they realized that something big was brewing. No one else has spotted it. And that stayed with me, particularly going back to the bulletin that I do every week. You can start to see trends emerging when you're starting to pull all this information together. So that's why I particularly like that movie, because it kind of validated my view of the world, that the opportunities there, they're just scattered all over the place, and you need a strategy to pull them all together to see where the next big thing is.
I love that. I'm building a list, a database, because I heard on the news this morning that all of the TV, which has stopped being filmed, is going to run out around Christmas time. And my partner and I, we both work. So obviously I work for myself. She works in a local hospital. So we're never going to run out of TV to watch. But I've got this list of entrepreneurial movies now, and it's building. It's quite a big
list. I bet, yeah.
Fantastic. What are your plans for the future, Rob? And how are you going to grow your business? And how can we get hold of you?
Plans for the future. I have no desire now to grow a massive empire. Never did. The early 50s, I'm happy with what we've got. I've got one way I grew my business, and will continue this way, going back to a little bit of a nugget for you guys, that when I started out, in fact, I was a sole trader, one-man band. Now, in business, that's probably the biggest risk that you have, because everything was revolved around me. I had four young kids who were depending on me. Especially the early days when, say, it was taking a while for the business to grow, I thought, I am the biggest risk to this family, because if anything happens to me, the income earning capacity is gone. Mm-hmm. And so very early on, I said, right, thinking with a banker's hat on, how do I de-risk this? How do I take away that big risk of it only being me? And well, the obvious thing would be to take staff on, but I didn't want to do that. I've been around big teams in my whole corporate life, and it wasn't something I wanted to do. And so, okay, this is after about 18 months into it. The BLS brand was out there, but I wouldn't say by no means famous. But I thought, well, tell you what, let's let go of the brand and essentially license it, or franchise it, for want of a better word. And so this is the way to de-risk it. These people aren't employed by me. And so now I just built up associates who operate under the brand, and they have their own company. They can do other things as well if they want, but we all operate as one. And that way, I've got a team around me. So there's five of us. We all operate as one team together, as if we were in one business. And so that's the way I've grown it, of managing the risk. Now, it means that potentially I'm giving away income in one sense. I remember my wife very early on said, well, why do you want to bring other people and let them have a slice of the market out there? So, well, because I'm realistic that I wouldn't probably never have touched those clients anyway. I wouldn't have the capacity to do it. So I'm not losing anything because I never would have been able to service them. And so that was the philosophy of just letting the brand go, have other people operate under it as well. And then obviously I take a certain cut of what they do. And that's the way I've grown the business and will continue to do so. I'm not out there aggressively looking for people to join. There are other organizations out there that have a franchise kind of model and actively marketing. Don't do it that way. If the right people come along then and they want to come on board, they can do so. But I've got a very strict criteria. You have to have a very good long track record in financial services to do this, because it's the credibility that we have that makes us good at what we do. So this is not a game for somebody who wants to learn how to do finance. You've got to have the battle scars to prove it, which for me then it will just be a very slow, steady growth. If someone comes along, brilliant. If somebody doesn't come along, not a problem. We've built a very tight team as it is. So it's more about controlled growth for me.
Fantastic. I think there's been some real nuggets in this podcast, and that one is very smart. And I just want people to kind of really think about that one, because that's a really smart way of growing your business without taking on all the risk of staff, and by also, you know, diversifying without taking on all the risk of doing the work as well. So that's a really smart tip, that one. So thank you very much, Rob. If our listeners want to get in touch with you, how can they do that?
Yep, just go along to the website, which is businessloanservices.co.uk. Drop me an email, info@businessloanservices.co.uk. Check me out on LinkedIn, search for Rob Warlow, on Twitter as well, Biz Loan Services, and YouTube, Business Loan Services, and also Rob Warlow as well. So a whole host of ways. Just Google my name, fairly unusual name. Although, funny enough, there is another guy called Rob Warlow who's also in financial services and is a mortgage broker. I mean, how weird is that with this unusual name?
Brilliant. I wonder if like Warlow means something about, you know, finance from the 1600s or something.
yeah, I wonder.
Rob, thank you so much for taking the time to share this brief delve into the real lives of real entrepreneurs. That's what this podcast is all about. Anyone listening, can I ask you to share this with any people that you think maybe starting a business, or any entrepreneurs out there, any business owners who you think might benefit? I think this is a very juicy content in this particular show. Lots of fantastic nuggets. Please like us on iTunes and subscribe on YouTube, as we're going out on both now. And if you'd like to take part in the show, please simply drop me an email at damon@rethinkingbusiness.biz, and we can have a chat. So Rob, thank you so much. Here's to your own future success, and see you soon.
Thanks very much. Cheers, Damon.